Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, it's cold outside still. It's above freezing. It's not doing anything at the moment, no precipitation. I think some of the snow is melting, I'm not sure. But I'm sitting in my humble abode here doing the show. So I don't have to deal with the melting or whatever's going on yet. Well, on today's show, every year there's a housewares show that goes on in Chicago, and they also have something, they call it a sneak peek, that happens here in New York City. And I get to see some products and test some products and write about them. And we're going to have somebody talk about the whole thing. What's the trend going on here in terms of the housewares? Maybe talk about some of the newer things or some of the odder things as well. And right before that, let me just, my favorite sponsor. Listen,
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Well, yeah, you can get these absolutely wonderfully delicious brownies by going to www.brownies.com. They're not sold in the supermarkets unless you're on the West Coast, but so worth it. Okay, so let's get off the topic of food, and let's get on the topic of housewares, as we have Lisa doing our chatting with us. Lisa, how are you?
I am good. How are you doing today?
Oh, good. I've been trying some products already. They're quite interesting. And I have to say, the one I found the most interesting is this clock that's run by water.
Oh, yes. I think that's called Bedol or
B-E-D-O-L.
Bedol.
Yeah.
I think it's a fascinating concept for a lot of consumers that you don't want a clock that uses batteries or that uses electricity. It's cost saving because you're only using water. You are saving the environment because you're not wasting batteries. You're not wasting electricity. So, and the water can be reused if, you know, it needs to be changed, I think, every 6 months or so. You could just pour it into a plant when you're done with it and put new water in. So I think it's just a great, interesting concept. So
yeah. I have one in front of me, but I understand that Mark has also, I don't know whether he invented it. I mean, I'll be asking you something about whether these people actually invented these products or just the one that patented or they're just marketing it. But the thing is that he has a prototype of a wall clock. So with the wall clock, you're going to have, like, the hands kind of thing. So what
right.
goes in my head is, like, how did we not do this up until now? I mean, it's like, have we all been stupid? I mean, that we've been using electricity and batteries when we could have used...
I wouldn't call it stupidity. Maybe it's
yeah.
just a leap of faith that we never really thought about before. I don't know many people that would think, maybe I'll put some water in my clock so I can run.
Right.
But think about it. If there are things that are powered by water and there are tons of products that are out there, you know, we have the Hoover Dam or things of that nature that are powered
right.
by water, why not a clock? I think someone who took the mentality that, okay, we can do it on a large scale. Let's see what we can do on a small scale. So
yeah. Okay. Anyway, and I haven't tried it yet. I also have the Chef Master.
The Chef Master?
Kitchen Master. That's what it's called.
Kitchen Master, yes. The Bellini
yes.
Kitchen Master.
Yeah.
I love this product. I think what I like about it is that it's small in size, but it has the function of 8 different appliances. This is from Bellini, and it comes with a 2-liter stainless steel bowl, and you can chop, mix, mince, whip, knead, blend, and stir. And you can also use it to cook, fry, and steam because it has adjustable temperature controls. So one of the bigger trends that we're seeing are a lot of these products are multifunctional. And I think the consumer concept is they're so busy multitasking. They don't have a lot of, especially in New York, a lot of space. So they want something very space-saving. So why not get a machine that can do more than just one thing? It can perform on multiple levels. So it's cost-saving, space-saving, and time-saving for a lot of consumers. So I think that's one of the bigger trends we're seeing this year are multiple different products, especially at the sneak preview that we had last month of these items that you can, you know, use for more than one function.
Yeah, It is amazing. I'm calling it, like, I guess, like one step up from a Vitamix.
Exactly.
Because a Vitamix, you can cook it as long as what you're putting in is not raw.
Right.
Like if you're putting, you can't put raw protein.
Correct.
Into the Vitamix to cook because you can make soups in there. But with this one, you can put the raw food as well and cook. Yeah, one-stop shopping, I'll tell you.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'm not sure if you saw there were a couple of other items that fall into that
yeah,
category.
Tell me about them.
Hamilton Beach has something called the Java Blend, and it's a 2-in-1 coffee brewer, so you can make hot or iced coffee. And then it has a blender, so you can blend cafe-style drinks or smoothies or shakes. So it's kind of like a place to get your hot and cold beverages all in one location. So that falls into that category. And then there's another product, and I don't believe this was at the sneak preview, but our PR team found out about it. It's called the Princess Compact for All. And I don't know if you saw that, but this is basically, if you think about the shape of a cube, it's 4 different appliances, and 2 are on the bottom and 2 are on the top, and they all can be plugged into one item. So it's a toaster, a juicer, a coffee maker, and a kettle, and it forms a breakfast cube. So, for example, the juicer has 3 power sockets on the back. So it's space-saving, especially, like I said before, you know, you don't have a lot of counter space. You can put, like, the juicer and the coffee maker on the bottom. You can put the toaster and the kettle on the top, and you can, you know, use 1, 2, 3, or 4 all at the same time.
Oh, so you're not actually purchasing the kettle and the coffee maker and et cetera,
it's a series of four. Right. Well, it's a series of four, so you can purchase them separately or you can purchase them all together as a set. But the idea is that you can plug them in and they could all run from one.
Right.
So, like, there's a power strip or power outlet on the back of one of them. So the idea being that they're small, they're compact, but it's space-saving.
Oh, that's really good.
So that was kind of fun. And then there's another one I saw that I liked. It's just a small concept, but it's called Bradshaw Has a Good Cook. It's called a Bowlander, and it's a combination bowl colander. And what's nice about this is it's got like a half-moon colander that clips onto the bowl, so when you pour in maybe fruits or vegetables in the bowl, you can just drain it through the colander and then just remove the colander, you know, when you want to just use it as a serving bowl. And a lot of consumers have colanders, but they don't have ones that attach right onto it, so you're not going to lose
right.
it, you're not going to misplace it, it's a little bit more space. And it's kind of just a fun, small, you know, simple way of making, you know, two products in one.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question. When people, like, you know, they want to exhibit whatever they have, I mean, do they have to get it approved, or they just say, here's something I get, you know, I want a booth, and that's it, you know? Let me pay
for
a booth.
Well, they contact the International Housewares Association, and they request booth space. They will let them know what products they want to exhibit. Some companies may be very small, so they may want to share space. Like, we have like an Inventors Corner. It's a very small space that they can use. Maybe they don't have a lot of money to purchase a full booth, but they want to get their products out there, so they kind of maybe go through that area. Or if we have companies that come from, you know, overseas, and they really are not familiar with the United States or how products are sold here, so they come in as part of like an exhibition. So maybe it's from Korea, or maybe it's from Mexico, or maybe it's from, you know, China, and they kind of come in and they showcase a bunch of different products, and they kind of share. They'll have their own booth, but they're under like an exhibition heading, so to speak. So you can kind of go and say, okay, I'm going to go and look at all the products that are here from, you know, this particular country. So, you know, if companies are interested, or maybe someone out there is an entrepreneur and would like to showcase, you know, I'm not sure if there's space available for this show, because I think that the show is pretty full. But, you know, they can contact the International Housewares Association. The website is www.housewares.org, and they can find out about, you know, exhibiting maybe at next year's sneak preview in New York, or at next year's show.
So you're getting combinations of like large companies such as Hamilton Beach, you know.
Oh, there's a variety
as well
of
as,
different companies.
As
yeah.
well as just someone who just invented something.
Right. There are more than 2,100 exhibitors at the show, and there are, of that 2,100, 500 are new. They've never exhibited at the show before.
Really?
30% of them come from outside the United States. Some of them, there are organized pavilions, like I mentioned before, and independent exhibitors, and they have products from, like, Brazil, Colombia, France, Hong Kong, Italy, Japan, Thailand, Turkey. There's over 60,000 total attendees for the show, and that includes buyers and sellers, trade guests, news media. Unfortunately, it's not open to the public. It is a trade-only show. That's why we have the sneak preview in New York, so that a lot of news media can come and look at some of the new products and be able to tell their viewers or their listeners about some of the things they're going to see on their store show sometime later this year.
Wow, That's such a great idea. I've been, like, writing about some of them that I've already gotten and tried out. One in particular was a grinder. It's a wet and dry, I guess, spice grinder.
Mm-hmm.
And normally I would have gone, oh, okay. But what it is once I started working with it, I mean, I've been like oh, let's take these. I bought a whole bunch of spices and fresh herbs, you know, whole spices and fresh herbs. I said, let me, you know, make different combinations and stuff like
right.
that. And it's a great idea. You know,
now, is that the Compagno spice system that you've been using, or is that a different product?
No, this is, it's a wet and dry grinder, spice grinder. I think the
okay.
company, I can't think of offhand, but they also had put out a tortilla maker, too.
Oh, okay.
Which I haven't gotten to doing. But
there's only so many hours in a day.
I know. You know, as a matter of fact, with the kitchen master, I'm having the guy come on the show twice. First, to really explain how to use it before I start using it.
Sometimes that's the best part about being at the House or Show or at the sneak preview, because you can see someone who's very familiar with
yeah.
The product, and you learn more about what it can do. Now the company, the Wet and Dry Grinder, that's the Chef Pro by Mantra.
That's the name
of the company.
Yes.
Yes, and they have the Chef Pro Tortilla Maker, which you haven't gotten to yet, but you will someday. Maybe you'll be making some tortillas or crepes or pancakes or
by the way, I have a new wave oven. I think you had that, I don't know, years ago at a sneak peek, and I between that and I had to get their PIC, the countertop, what do they call the precision induction system?
Oh, the induction cooktops?
Yes. And between those two things, it's like I haven't even used my oven yet.
How do you have enough space for all this stuff to dry?
Well, what I wind up doing is, like, I go, okay, now I need to, like, find – like, what am I not going to use every single day? So what I'm going to do is, with the kitchen master, I'm going to see what I can do every day. And if not, like, you know, then I can put that off the counter and in another space for when I need to pull it out, kind of thing. That's how I have this all set. I don't have a lot of space, but I have a lot of closets.
Well, it sounds like one of the other trends this year, you're right
yes.
on top of, home organization.
Yes.
There's a lot of products and a lot of consumers that are feeling overwhelmed by all the clutter in their homes, all the stuff that they have, and they want to take control of that and look for these space-saving home organization products. So you probably would be right on the money for that.
Oh, yes, I guess so. when you have people that when they say it, when I'm getting a product, let's say, it,
right.
now, do these, it is these, let me put it this way. It's like when you watch Shark Tank. And
okay.
you see these people come on. Okay. And then you see people that are actually invented the product. I'm looking at, like, a company when I'm seeing
right.
a product. In other words,
right.
have these people, let's say, invented a product and then said, I'm going to have Hamilton Beach buy it?
It can be a variety of different things. Like, every year we have something we call it the Inventor's Corner, which are basically these entrepreneurs. They've created and invented a product, but maybe they need to, form a relationship with a company to help them either manufacture it or distribute it or sell it. Maybe they don't know a lot about, you know, getting a product to retail. So they
Right.
may want some assistance, or they just may want the attention or to get their product known, and they want to do it themselves. There's a variety of different types of exhibitors. We have some, like I said before, are small inventors, entrepreneurs. They do it all. They make it, they market it, they sell it, or there are some that are, you know, like a larger size company where they have in-house a lot of companies that do, a lot of employees that do their own product development internally, and then,
okay,
you know, they bring that product to market. This is a great showcase for the trade to get their products shown to the buyers. I mean, the whole idea behind this is to get the buyers to see the products, to get them excited about, you know, showing them and bringing them to the stores for their consumers to purchase them. So it's a really, you know, it's a kind of like the highlight for the housewares industry. You know, this is one of the biggest housewares shows for the business. It's the world's largest housewares show, to be honest with you, and it's one of the top five largest trade events at McCormick Place in Chicago. So it is quite an event, and it's a great business opportunity for a lot of consumers, buyers, and we even have like trade guests coming to you know, to see the new products and meet buyers and exhibitors.
Now, sounds like a lot to see. Now, just as a let's say that I came in terms of coming here as press, I'm not
right.
really looking for anything in particular. I'm basically looking to see everything that's going on. How long would it actually take for one to walk around?
Well,
it
depends. If you wanted to see the entire show,
yeah.
It's from start to finish, it's 13 miles. So this is three different exhibit halls. It is very large. But if you were focused, like a lot of the media that comes to the show may only be focused on a particular product area, like, for example, kitchen electrics. So that would be one exhibit hall.
Okay.
It would not be as large as seeing the entire show. But it encompasses every category for everything in the home. There are things like cookware and bakeware and kitchen electrics, cutlery and gadgets, tabletop, dinnerware, pet supplies, home organization, you know, cleaning goods, cleaning supplies. It's a very expansive show. So it could take, you know, a couple of days. I mean, it's open from Saturday to Tuesday. So there are a lot of people that do come every day because it's a bit overwhelming if you've never been there before. But it's fascinating. It's so interesting. There's so much going on at the show. It's unfortunate that it's not open for the public because, I mean, it's a fun show. But since it is trade only, we get to give the news media a sneak preview. You get to come and you can kind of tell your viewers or your audience how exciting it was.
Or you can think of it as if you do get to attend and see the entire show, you've exercised by walking 13 miles.
Absolutely. So you're beneficial for your health and for your mind
yeah.
as well.
So, I mean, like, it's really amazing. So this is, how long has this been going on? How many years?
Oh, the Housewares show?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I believe, let me see, what the show has been in existence, I believe, since the 1930s. So it's been taking place for quite a few years.
Oh, okay. I wish there was somebody who could tell me, like, what was the first items that were coming in? They were.
Well, unfortunately, I was
not that you were around. That would be interesting.
The history that I remember, the show wasn't held in an exhibit hall. Back then, there wasn't a McCormick Place to be held in. It was held, like, almost in a hotel room, you know, in people would come from and go from, like, a, you know, an exhibit within the hotel rooms to start out very small. But it's been in Chicago for quite a few years. Years ago, it used to actually be held twice a year. Then we, it became so overwhelming that, and the buyers felt that they only really needed to come out once a year. So it's been once a year, probably for about 20 years now. So I've been covering the show since 1988, I think. I've been associated with the housewares industry. So it's I'm showing the age, but I've been there for a very long time.
No, it's interesting because if possible, I don't need to know now, but if possible, I would love to find out, like, way back when of something that was shown that's now, like, now we all have that in the home.
Well, I do know that on staff we have one of our one of my coworkers has written a book about the history of the housewares industry and the housewares show. I can contact her and see if maybe we can make an arrangement for her to contact you to do an interview.
Oh,
she can
we'd
tell
love
you a lot
to.
About the history of housewares.
Yeah, I can if I can get a copy of the book and then we can chat about it on the radio.
Okay, I will see what I can do to make that arrangement. That sounds like your audience would probably love to learn a little bit about the history of housewares.
You know, and we could talk about and what didn't make it.
What didn't make it? Well, I'm sure there were a lot of things that were shown that never kind of got off the ground. But you know, there's always a history of the near misses and the hits, so to speak. So it might be fun to kind of take a trip down memory lane and see where we all headed or started from, to be honest.
Also, now, since you said that this started so long ago, I'm wondering if, like, as part of this, I mean, like, in terms of the history, whether any of these products were featured at either the 1939 or 1964 World's Fair in New York City.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I'm not much of a historian on this.
Yeah, maybe if I can get that, you know, get in touch with, you know, when I talk about this, because here we're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary and 75th anniversary of the World's Fairs, and it would be interesting to talk about products that were there and either you first saw it at the fair or you first saw it at a housewares show.
Okay. I will I'll get in touch and I will get back to you and see if we can make arrangements for an interview.
Okay. So or as I say, the ones that made it to quote unquote to Shark Tank and the ones that were turned down by Shark Tank, if you would say. Kind of thing. Not that it really makes a difference. I mean, it's just it's interesting when you watch that show to say, oh, this will work. It's just maybe the money kind of thing.
Right.
Or you think about it afterwards kind of thing. I'm going to be looking for the trend in the clock powered by water. That's the Will it be in everyone's home? You know, the funny thing is, I can't even, my brain is thinking, now, can you make this into a watch? Can you imagine that?
That would be a really interesting watch.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute, I got to fix my watch. Wait, can I go into your house? And I just need some little tap water over here. But then again, in terms of clocks and watches, people have cell phones, and they go, oh, what time is it? Wait a minute, look at my cell phone. I mean, but anyway, well, this was really great. Anything else you want to share about the show?
Just one other trend that we're seeing, and
I think
is interesting for consumers that seem to be embracing a healthier lifestyle, and they're very interested in eating more fresh fruits and vegetables, and they're looking for, like, a lot of food preparation and storage products that help them create healthier meals. And I've heard so much about, the obesity issues, especially for childhood obesity, but I think it looks like consumers are really starting to take control and really want to embrace a healthier lifestyle. Not so much because they want to lose weight. I think they want to tackle any health concerns that as people are getting older and living longer, they don't want to deal with those issues, maybe things like diabetes or, a longer-term health issue. So a lot of the products that we're going to be seeing and I'm sure we can touch base as we get either right before the show or right after the show about some of these newer products to help consumers eat healthier and prepare healthier foods for themselves and for their families.
Okay, that's really fabulous. I guess it'll help to have all the writers write about the products,
right,
and or review them. In such a way to, the pros and cons, where the cons will probably be, where to keep it.
Right, exactly.
You bought too many. Okay. And now, now that you have this, it's time for a garage sale of the stuff that you no longer need.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate it, Lisa, having you call in.
All right, you're welcome.
And
see what we can make arrangements for another interview, and we'll do the history of housewares.
Okay, great.
All right, take care.
Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Well, yeah. Well, now we're going to go on to our next topic. Okay. Rather than by going into the whole thing, I'm just going to introduce our next guest, Jerry. You're on the air?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Jerry Mendelson, and I'm the Executive Vice President and CEO of the Samuel Field Y, as well as our affiliated agency, the Central Queens Y in Forest Hills. And I was so excited to be invited to come and talk about the Real Abilities New York Disabilities Film Festival that will be showing at the Central Queens Y in Forest Hills on Sunday, March the 9th, and Monday, March the 10th.
Okay, so now tell us what this is all about.
Well, the Real Abilities Film Festival emerged from the JCC of Manhattan along with a group of professionals that have devoted their lives to working with people with disabilities and their families. And I co-chair that task force through UJA Federation of New York. And what we realized is that there needed to be a way of engaging the community in an exploration of the strengths and concerns of people with disabilities and their families. And that was 6 years ago that we started to have films relating to the lives of people with disabilities. But what has happened that is sensational is that the quality of the films are such that we have devotees of this film festival that come not only to learn about the lives of people with disabilities, but come to see astonishingly wonderful films. And now the film festival has actually gone national. There are Real Abilities film festivals in Boston, in sites in Washington, D.C., and the metro area, in San Antonio, Texas, in Detroit, in Milwaukee, in Chicago. It's all over. It's in Atlanta. And there are thousands and thousands of people across the nation who are coming and learning about people with autism and their strengths and challenges, people with developmental disabilities, people with mobility difficulties, and we're starting a national conversation, and that we invite people to be part of that conversation and to see artistically magnificent films as well.
Well, that's fabulous. So now the ones here, that's just to make it local, I mean, which is not,
sure,
because we're on the Internet. So, and the ones that at the Y here in Queens.
So on
were they
Sunday, go ahead.
Were
I'm
they
sorry.
Specifically chosen having anything to do with Queens, or why were those, like, I think this is a, is there four, I think? I'm not sure.
Well, there was specific reasons,
okay,
why we chose the films that we chose.
Mm-hmm.
In Queens, we've been galvanized for the past, since the fall, on the tragedy of Avante, the little boy with autism who walked out of his school in Long Island City and perished in the East River.
Right.
And many of our citizens and our law enforcement agencies were involved in the hunt for Avante. So the first film on Sunday, March the 9th, is a film called Stand Clear of the Closing Door. And actually, the little boy that this is about, Ricky,
mm-hmm,
and his mother will be attending the film.
Oh.
After an argument with his mother, 13-year-old Ricky runs away, who has autism, runs away from his home in Rockaway Beach, Queens, and he escapes into the labyrinthine New York City subway system. For Ricky, who has autism, the subway system is overwhelming, and his family desperately searches for him, while both coming together and falling apart. So Ricky will be coming to talk about his experience with his mother. This happened in Queens in the wake of Sandy, in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. It's a shared history, a shared environment for people in Queens, but it speaks to a huge issue in that the leading cause of death for children with autism is wandering.
Right.
So we hope to galvanize people's attention on truly a public health hazard, talk about ways of working on this and preventing it, and feeling the urgency of one family's story through a beautifully, beautifully done film. That starts at 11 a.m. on Sunday, March the 9th, at the Central Queens Y, located in Forest Hills, Queens. On Sunday, March the 9th at 2 p.m., there's the story of Gabrielle, which again is a magnificent film done in Canada. It comes from Canada. And it speaks to a clear issue in involving families in Queens. Queens has the largest number of group homes in the city of New York, are located in Queens, because at the time of group home development, Queens had land.
Right.
Within Queens itself, therefore, are many, many, many of our fellow residents are people with developmental disabilities living in group homes. The issue for people living in group homes, often about becoming independent, their levels of independence, what choices they can or can't make for themselves, are critical in their lives and in the lives of their family. Gabrielle follows the story of a young woman who desperately wants to have a sexual relationship. She desperately wants to feel herself and her being a woman and to have,
mm-hmm,
somebody really, really important in her life. And it is the story of how to move that mountain with it while living in a group home.
Okay. And did I read something about this could be a matchmaker?
Well, that is on Monday, March the 10th,
okay,
at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's the film Do You Believe in Love? And this film comes from Israel. And this film relates to a matchmaker who herself has a disability and who helps make matches for people who have disabilities. And it's the story of a society that kind of grows out of that. And featured at our showing will be a matchmaker to talk about her job as a matchmaker.
Oh, okay. So now this is, I understand this is the third year that this is in Queens?
Yes, it is. We're very excited to be a site.
Now, just so I know, are you open on Saturday?
Our agencies are not open on Saturdays.
Okay. Now, I just the only reason I'm asking, because I want to get over there and get I want to get a photo of the photos. Tell us about
the photos are sensational. The photos is the Pearls Project. It is a photography exhibit that I love. There's a not-for-profit organization called Positive Exposure that has a most gifted photographer who actually photographed models and worked in the commercial arena for a very long time. What he realized is that people with disabilities often aren't seen for the beautiful people that they are and for the strengths that they had. And he came to the Samuel Field Y and did photo shoots of our children with disabilities that we work with every day. And they look marvelous. What can I tell you? They look wonderful. And the photo exhibit that has been showing, it's been at different companies, it's been in different commercial sites, various galleries, show the rich, rich beauty of each of these special people, and is an eye-opener in terms of looking at the lens of your world a little differently.
Okay, so, because I'm on deadline. The article is in, and so I think it's either Friday or Sunday that I can just like pop in and get a photo of the photo, so to speak.
Terrific.
Oh, okay. I can just, you know, like anybody can just pop in and look at that
absolutely
particular exhibit. Okay.
Absolutely.
But as far as the film fest, is there a charge for the film fest, or is it donation?
We have a $5 suggested donation for members of the Central Queens Y and Samuel Field Y, and an $8 suggested donation for non-members of the agencies.
Okay, that's and by the way, just because I might be attending. How long are the films? I mean, are they more like
thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Stand Clear of the Closing Door is about 100 minutes long. It's the length of a short feature. And then there will be discussion with the young boy and his mother following. We try in each of our films to add a little bit of time so that we can have our audience share, and the directors and producers, the director of this particular film, Stand Clear of the Closing Door, is coming as well. These people are very, very proud of their works. They hope to gain additional exposure. And when people come, that's actually how the film festival got to be nationwide. People came, they took it back to their home communities, and that's how we've been growing.
Oh. That's great. I guess I'm going to probably, well, are you there all the time at this?
I will be there. I work out of both the Central Queens Y and the Samuel Field Y. I am the CEO of both.
I'll
be present for the Sunday film in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be there all day on Monday.
Okay. This is great. Is there anything else that you would like to share about this, the festival?
So I just wanted to say that one of the reasons that we offer these films is to spotlight the needs that people with disabilities and their families have. And the Samuel Field Y and the Central Queens Y offer a number of family support programs to assist people with disabilities and their families. So that we offer after-school daycare, for example, for children with autism. We offer and other developmental disabilities. We have sports leagues at both agencies for children with disabilities. We have a social club for adults with disabilities where wonderful friendships form and offer a Thanksgiving for the entire Queens community of people with disabilities and their family that is attended by close to 100 people every Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So we are open to address the needs and concerns of people with disabilities, and we welcome your questions and inquiry and hope to have a place for you within our agencies.
Now, one last question in terms of the film festival. If there's a website for people to go to see not just where it's located in Queens, but, you know, where their locations are.
Yes, if people are interested, first the website of the Central Queens Y and the Samuel Field Y has all of the information regarding the film festival as it's showing in Queens.
Right.
And if folks want to I just want to get you the exact web address to because the Real Abilities:New York.
Well, or actually, if you Google, so to speak.
If you Google the Real Abilities Film Festival.
Yeah, so it's I want to let people know it's REELABILITIES.
That's great. You can Google that, and New York will come up first.
Okay. And this way you could see where else in the United States that this is being held as well and when.
Absolutely.
So, great. So I appreciate your coming on and talking to us about this. I will be there.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to have shared this with you.
Have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Yeah, well, I'll be able to attend the particular one on March 9th so I can write an article. I'm speaking of, all right, before I speak of articles, because right now I need to take a quick break here. Where is she? Kiko Matsui. I'm going to be seeing Kiko Matsui next week. Oh, my God. Well, in that case, let's do a Kiko song from the road. Incidentally, Keiko Matsui will be appearing next week at B.B. King's in New York City, but you could check it out on her, Google her name. It's K-E-I-K-O is her first name. Matsui, M-A-T-S-U-I is her second name. Can't go wrong seeing her perform. Okay, so what we're going to go on to now. I had the opportunity of doing a food tasting. Chef Michael DiGiorgio. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the name. Okay. Let's just call him Chef Michael. Anyway, Chef Michael is over at a restaurant in New York City, actually out in Queens, called Vetro, V-E-T-R-O, located on Cross Bay Boulevard. Place is owned by the Russos, which also have some other restaurants. Just right down the block is Russo's on the Bay, a huge catering place. And then they have a another restaurant in Douglaston, and I think it's, wow, I've known that family for so many years. One of the brothers, the fathers, the uncles, somebody has another restaurant also in Queens. Anyway, but let me get to this one before I... So I did a tasting last night, and what I wanted to do was the chef tasting in terms of regions of Italy and, you know, what they were noted for and whatever Chef Mike wanted to have me indulge in. So let me tell you what I had. The first item is from... the region of Puglia, P-U-G-L-I-A. This is Italian, so I'm not sure how everything is pronounced, but I have a feeling it's not Puglia, it's Puglia. Okay. And I had cannellini and broccoli rabe puree and burrata. Okay, so. What this consisted of, it was white beans with broccoli rabe, garlic and oil, cooked into a rich puree with toasted bread and a tomato salad. Then this was plated with a burrata mozzarella. Now, if you haven't ever had a burrata mozzarella, it's like if you took a fresh mozzarella and you opened it up and it was like creamy inside. That's the best way to describe what it is. And this is not, this is, comes from Italy. And then there was also a apricot and pear salad to go along with it. Now, I asked him why this region, and he said that in this region, they have the best of the olive oils, vegetables, beans, and seafood. And they're known to make hearty soups at home. And this is also where the burrata was created. And when you eat this like it tastes each of it in one bite kind of thing. So what you take to get the creaminess of the burrata, and you get the sort of bitterness and saltiness of the puree, and the sweetness of the fruit. God, I'm not. I don't have leftovers of that. Yes, I mean that went. I'm sorry. I had to have it more. Okay, okay. So now the next item was pin, C-I-U-P-P-I-N. Okay. And this is from the area Liguria, And this consisted of halibut, shrimp, clams, and calamari, cooked with tomatoes, garlic, olive oil, on toasted bread. And I forgot that there's also some chili pepper in it. Not terribly much, but I noticed on this plate with this like whole chili pepper sitting there going, and I'm thinking, whoa, not for me. But it's okay. It was okay. It was fine. I'm not a spicy person. You know, that's just it. So, okay. Now, in this particular area is more northern, he says, and they have smaller olive crops, but fruity, and seafoods off of the northern coast, if you've ever had chirpin, because this is, it's a kind of a common thing to be having in the United States, I believe. This is where this originated, in this particular area. There's a little bit of leftover in my fridge. Okay, I'll munch on that later. Now, the next item, I went into the kitchen. That was so cool. Okay. And I watched Chef Michael, as well, however he wants to call himself. He's just such a doll. Make spaghetti calabrese from the region of Calabria. And it was spaghetti sauteed with roasted eggplant, artichokes, peppers, chilies, sun-dried tomato, and anchovies, and garlic and oil. Okay. For me, we left after chilies, and I'm not a garlic person, so we left out the garlic, but we did put some shallots in it. Now, let's see. With this one in particular, this area is known for the seafoods and a lot of chili peppers. The short red ones, the green finger ones, like, you know, the kind of bell pepper looking kind. And another one, like Cubanel. I'll have to look that up there. Obviously, I'm not a pepper person. And also vegetables that's grown in the area, too, another thing. And people tend to have spicy food in that area. I have leftovers of that, too. Man, I'm getting hungry. Okay, next. Okay. Sogliola. Sogliola. Di Sassari. I'm sorry. Sassari. Okay. You know what's easy for me? If anything is easy to pronounce, it's Spanish. Whatever letter is there, that's what you say. Not like English. I think English is the worst. Okay. Anyway, this is from the area of Sargena. And what I had is pan-roasted halibut with lemon, tarragon, olive oil, and breadcrumbs. And let's see, there were garnishes of watercress and some tarragon. Oh, my memories of eating that. I have leftovers of that. Tarragon is a big thing in that area. That's where the thing is. It's a Sardinia Sardegna. Boy, my boss is going to kill me because I'm writing for an Italian paper, too. Sardegna. Okay, I'm going to call my boss and ask him to make sure. Okay, anyway, it's a little island, and then so fish is a big deal out there. They have something, a fish that's like similar to halibut, and that's why he chose the halibut. I guess they're small ones. My own handwriting, I don't know what they're called. But they're small halibuts, and you can have it for the halibut. Yeah. All right. This was a killer. Okay. Not to pronounce. Lombata di Viterbo. This is from the area of Valle di Aosta. Okay. I'm so sorry. Valle di. It looks like I wrote Aosti. Okay. I'll look at it. Okay, what it is a rib veal chop. Nice thick one. Grilled and stuffed with lump crab meat and wild mushrooms. This was served with fingerling potatoes and broccoli rabe. Oh, yes, I do have leftovers. This is a signature dish The chop is a signature dish of to show the finer meats that are in Italy, as well as the wild mushrooms. So that's what this area is known for. Okay. I had a little room for dessert. I had to try the tiramisu. What can I tell you? But anyway, and speaking of signature dish, one of his signature dishes is also lobster cappuccino. So it's a Maine lobster with tomatoes, cognac, and foam milk. And a pastry stick is put in. I have that at home. God, I'm going to pig out when I get off this show. Anyway, so to get back, okay, let's see if I can find at Vetro. Again, it's at Vetro, V-E-T-R-O, on Cross Bay Boulevard in Howard Beach. Where's the... Sorry, I have to grab a napkin to wipe the drool from the side of my face here. Okay, that's done. Thank goodness. So, you'll go to apologize. It's my rubber chickens. They want to have a taste of the leftovers. I know. So what I'm going to do is as I take them out, and they want it on their blog, so I'm going to take photos of them with the leftovers. I noticed that there was no chicken has any of this. I am so happy. So I'm going to leave everybody now and go munch on some food and tend to my rubber chickens. So remember, Vetro Restaurant in Howard Beach. and chef, Michael DiGiorgio. Hey, maybe I got that right. Everybody, well, have a great day, evening, morning, or just like, yeah, chill out, yeah. Bye, everybody. Till next time.